Hello, one and all, and welcome to the 243rd episode of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast, recorded on January 29th, 2024. Andrew, would you care to answer a hypothetical question?
Always.
All right, so let's say you're a football coach in a conference title game, have had a miraculous first half, better than you ever thought like possible at this level. You're up by 14, 7 minutes left on the clock in the third. You know, you're not playing as well as you thought you would in this opening, but hey, you're at the other team's like 30. You're, God, I don't even know, like 2 yards away from converting on a fourth down. Do you go for it or do you take the field goal and extend your lead?
Here's the thing about this conversation that kind of irks me is that in that half, there were two like very similar situations that came up with.
What do you think my question for Ryan's going
to
be?
Short fourth down conversions that they needed to make. And the same people that are like ripping on them for kicking the field goal in the one instance are like also ripping on them for not kicking the field goal in the second instance.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like I'm getting them confused in my head. I don't remember which one came first.
When did they kick a field goal?
No, they kicked a field goal in the second half.
Did there they?
They
were scoreless in the second half.
Yeah, I think it was the first half.
They scored a touchdown in the second half, but they did. They were scoreless.
I swear to God, maybe it was then late in the second quarter, because there was definitely an instant. Oh, I'm thinking of the Ravens. Look, I do not blame them for going for it there. Obviously they didn't get it. Obviously it came back to bite them in the end. But like, fourth down conversions are kind of like that thing that they're only good if you like succeed. Like the decision making process doesn't really like get talked about. It's mostly just the results. That's what people care about. Like people are not mad that they went for it there instead of kicking the field goal. They're mad that they didn't get it. I think that going for it was fine. Like, they know that the 49ers are an explosive offense that could come back and get you at any moment, which they fucking did. And they've done this multiple times. And so they're like, yeah, let's go for it. Let's keep the gas down. Let's not just like curl up and try to not lose the game. They were playing to win the game. And they lost. they didn't execute. I think the decision making was fine. It's just they didn't fucking execute. I mean, there were a lot of dropped passes. I feel like there were wide open guys that were overthrown or underthrown, and then like wide open guys that just, you know, dropped perfectly placed balls. It didn't go their way. I think that the decision making was fine.
Okay.
A follow-up.
Ryan Holtz, another hypothetical question. Let's say you are a football coach for this same team. It's later in the game now, about halfway through the fourth quarter. You're 4th-and-3 at the other team's 30. Boy, they have closed in. They've closed in quite a lot, and you have been scoreless so far in the second half. Do you go for a kick? Do you get something on the board? Do you get a little bit of mojo going? Or you listen to that voice in your head that says, well, wait, if I don't go for it on this fourth, people might think that I'm a pussy. So we gotta go for it. What do you do?
Genuinely, I would never be in that situation because the first one, I would have kicked it. But if I had a stroke and my assistant elected to go for it on that first one, I would have gone for it on the second one because the second one I thought was much more like go for it ready. Like they were completely on their heels. Their defense had been on the field basically the entire second half. They were absolutely gassed. You need to buy time for them. And at that point, it did not seem like the 49ers offense was going to be stopped. So you needed more points. The first one, it's all about 3 possessions, baby. The amount of time that you spend up by 3 possessions in the NFL is how you win games. Like, you might not win by 3 possessions, but if you spend most of the game up by 3 possessions or more, you are like 95%, probably even more, going to win that game. So that field goal is so crucial to make it 3 possessions. versus just nothing. And let's be honest, the way it was going, they would have missed that fucking field goal the second time. In the fourth quarter, that was a miss every time. Just football mojo, that field goal would have been missed. I think the first one probably goes in. It was just under 50. I think you gotta trust your kicker a little bit. Fourth and three. Fourth and inches, probably time to go for it. Fourth and three, so much can go wrong, and so much did. Like, they had the perfect play. It was executed perfectly, and the receiver just decided, hey, I'm going to drop this for no reason. Like, that's what can happen when it's fourth and three. Fourth and inches, it's just push, and everything will be fine. So, yeah, that fourth and three for me, that should have been a kick. Make it 17. You know, your defense gets a little bit of like a, okay, we're up by three scores. Let's fucking lock in here. The fumble probably never happens. Like, I don't know. To me, that was obviously where it all went wrong. So
that and the absolute circus catch, like ricochet touchdown.
It would have been pass interference, though. That's the thing. Like, that would have been a pass interference. The catch was insane. Absolutely. It was irrelevant. Like, if he would have not been touched on his way down and it would have been a touchdown immediately instead, then it would have made a difference. But no, the catch literally didn't matter at all because it would have been pass interference. They would have started with the ball there anyway. So, but what a garbage play too by the Lions.
Mm.
So no, there's pieces that need to be growing, but they're there. I know our friend Ian was very, very sad. And rightfully so. I don't think any Packer fan can truly empathize with what he's going through. But yeah, there's so much reason for optimism. And it seems like you got everything there. It's just time to keep growing. And, you know, I agree. Jared Goff is not the elite 100%, no doubt about it, this is your franchise quarterback. But I don't think he was the problem last Ooh. Night. I think he played exactly as well as he needed to, and the rest of the team let him down. So, can you do?
In that vein, last but not least, I am Lucas DeRuyter, and if I were coaching a team in these circumstances, a team that is historically underperforming, that I remember from my childhood having a winless season, which in any iteration of the NFL is a statistical anomaly, and then I lost this game by 3 points after refusing at multiple critical junctures to go for a field goal. Well, I'd be kicking myself right now. I would not be pleased.
You'd be kicking yourself?
Yeah.
Through some uprights?
Hopefully.
3 points?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would be kicking yourself. You yourself would be the one out there kicking the field goal.
There you go.
Oh. Listen, like, I had this hypothetical. I forget if this is the last podcast or just a discussion, but if I'm an owner, if I'm a team owner, I'm on the roster, you know? I got my own jersey. I'm wearing it all the time.
Yeah, no, we've been over this. It has your net worth on it.
You talked about your jersey, but you definitely did not say you were a player. You were on the salary for that team. I think that might get
you. Yeah, you're
removed.
Taking up a roster spot.
Yeah.
And you're roster and you're, spots are very you're not valuable. Even inactive on game day. You are active. You're a special
up.
Teams maven. Like, you are out there covering kicks.
Listen, like, realistically, am I more, is it more accurate to say I'd be in the practice squad? Yeah, probably.
Realistically, wait, hold on. Because of how good you are at football, or why would you be on the practice? Because you don't belong on either, Lucas.
Because I'm
spoiler
the
alert.
Owner. I get to be
so
there.
So then why wouldn't
on
you
the
be
ground?
On the active roster? What do you mean realistically you'd be
well,
on the practice
squad? Because I want the team
squad.
To do well. And like, I got to listen to my coaches. If they're telling me like, hey, man, not your time. Hey, you keep doing the work, practice squad, like making some really good, great locker room presence. Maybe someday, maybe if we ever need a position filled, like a couple of substitutes. Yeah, that's, you're right up there.
That's my position, is that if you were listening to your coaches, they'd be like, you are absolutely not a fucking player. You are not getting paid to play for this organization. So if you're already ignoring them, might as well go for it. You might as well be the starting quarterback.
Yeah, they'll quit. Yeah. Your coaches will quit and your players will not play for you. You will pull a Dan Snyder in South Park, being alone on the field, snapping the ball and then dying.
There's been a lot of these hypotheticals in the NBA of like, how good would a team have to be for me to be on it and get significant minutes and they still win a championship? like random ass average Joe.
Yeah, how good of a four player rotation have to be to make up
eight.
For the fact. Yeah.
You'd probably need some bench depth too, because anytime you're on the floor, it's gonna be tragic. Like you are gonna be the biggest defensive liability that's ever happened. So yeah, I think it was assuming you have to play like 20 minutes a game. Like, how good would the remainder of the roster have to be? And in basketball, that's a big chunk. Mm-hmm. In football, I bet you they could probably hide you a little better. But like, I am curious, like, I would just like the Super Bowl champions with like a few extra pieces be able to pull it off? Or would it have to be like God squad level, best player at every position, and then you play like wide receiver who just stands there every play, and then you play a fucking cornerback that stands there every play, and the coordinators just have to scheme like 10 man plays on both sides? Like, how would it work?
I mean, my gut reaction is you are the kicker and they just never kick.
No, that's cheating.
No.
I think that's cheating.
Yeah.
You have to be on the field.
Because then you're not playing. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be on the field on offense and defense. That's what I'm saying. Like, you have to be.
Oh,
yeah,
both?
I think,
wait, both?
Oh, definitely
offense?
On both.
You have to be
100%
a two-way
both.
Player?
You have to be an Iron Man. Yeah, you have to be on the field offense and defense. Because for me, if you're on, I think they'd pick offense. I think you'd play wide receiver and you would just stand there. And like, they have to cover you. Like, if you stand near the sideline, they could throw it to you still and you could catch it and get like 3 yards of play and just run immediately out of bounds. You know, like, they do have to assign someone to you on offense, like, and then they can run the plays with the remaining 10 elite players. Like, I think that one wouldn't be that problematic. I think defense would be, oh my God, like, quite the challenge. So that's why I think you have to go both ways. But I don't know.
Yeah, at that point, I feel like, I mean, obviously, none of us have the physique to play this position, but I feel like in that situation, they make you a defensive lineman.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And play with a three-man front with you also just kind of there.
With the hope that you'd get hurt so they
no,
don't have
no,
to
with,
play
with
you
the hope
anymore?
That, like, maybe you, like, trip the guy, like, with your whole body, that you, like, lay down and, like, make the guy stumble so that somebody else can, like, in the aggregate, make up for your lack of ability. Because none of us would be able to play cornerback. Like, you know.
No,
like
that's what I'm saying. You just stand there off to the side.
Yeah, no, like, but exactly. Then you're not playing. And
you're playing.
But
you're around.
But playing with, like, a three defensive back committee.
Well,
is
no,
a,
you'd have
like
quarters.
That is not like a way to be able to, like, effectively play defense.
They'd be in the nickel. It'd be 3-3-5. They're like in a 3-4, but one of their linebackers, I guess, is a corner. So it's kind of like a 3-3 and then five D-backs.
But if you are a cornerback, even if you're standing out of the way, like, you are not able to do anything. You are a net negative.
Yeah. Or,
I mean, if you're playing, you know, like, maybe behind two defensive linemen, at the very least, maybe the small mass of your body can slow the runner down enough to then let the linebacker come in and make
a
play.
If you are in the fray, if you're in the trenches, you are on your back every
exactly
single
but
play
at the very least
instantly.
they have to make the motion of moving you out of the way.
I don't think they
that
do.
that can slow them down enough for somebody else to do the play. And again, you can always just fucking lie flat on the ground and maybe trip them up.
I think with one hand, You are being pancaked every play instantly.
Yeah,
and then that
but again,
lineman is freed
slows
up.
Momentum.
To...
Slows
no,
momentum.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't slow. They're firing off as fast as they would have. You are not slowing them down in the slightest in the trenches. As a corner, like some of those corners and wide receivers weigh less than me. Like I'm not saying I'm going to not get pancaked most of the time, but like I'm going to be up. I'm going to be upright most of the time. Like I'll spend the majority of the play on my 2 feet, which I think is a slightly more positive outlook than on the ground.
If you're playing basically with a defensive back that is not on the field for all mm-hmm. intents and purposes.
Well, he would be on the field.
No, you're on the field, but you're not like even part of the play. Like that leaves receivers and tight ends open that like they're going to throw for fucking 15, 20 yards every single play.
But in your scenario, you're an extra lineman. So
you can stop the run with a light box. You can stop the run with a light box.
I'm so confused. How is it any different where you line up on the field? No matter what, you're subbing out a player. It's up to the coaches to decide which player gets subbed out. I'm not saying you pull Jair Alexander for you. You can still pull an extra lineman. You could still pull an extra linebacker and just have that many defensive backs.
I'm just saying, you put one of us in front of the guy that's running the ball. You know, your broken body can slow them down enough to let somebody else do their job.
I play flag football every weekend, and we've got this, the organizer is like, he's hitting his sunset years, you know, like he's staring down 60, like the fact that he's even playing flag football regularly.
Oh, he's playing? Okay.
Yeah, is one of those things. Damn. And he plays quarterback because he built a rule set where he's like able to play quarterback essentially. And then what happens is a lot of times we have an odd number of players. So it'll be like 8-on-7, and he always takes the extra player, says that his center is ineligible so that there's no real advantage on offense, even though there is because they have an extra blocker. And then on defense, he doesn't do anything. He's just part of the defense who doesn't play very well. So it's kind of 7-on-7, but they get an extra guy. And all he does is just like stand around in the middle, and every once in a while he gets his hand on a ball. And I think that's where I could somewhat play. Like as a guy who played football my entire life, is like a pretty decent flag football player and like was okay in tackle. I think I could just sit around and like two or three times a game somewhat affect the play. And so, that's better than being on my ass every single snap. Like just laying there.
This question for the people I'm talking to, Madden heads. In the hypothetical, as I described it, you're in this position because you are the owner. So presumably as a player, you're fine making the league minimum. Cause most of your money is just coming from like team performance, like broader, like merch sales, et cetera, et cetera. Does that allocate enough funds to allow the team to hire larger caliber, greater caliber players in other positions that they wouldn't be able to otherwise, and effectively min-max, or is the financial dimension not enough here?
No. Well, it's no, because again, you're not replacing a starter. You're replacing the 53rd member of the guy who literally never sees the field. You're replacing him, and he's definitely making the league minimum. So there's no difference financially. You are fucking the team pretty hard by being on the roster at all. It is a complete waste of roster space.
Most of the cap space that a team uses is being taken up by like usually half a dozen to like 10 guys that like have made those second contracts. And then the rest of them are league minimum and like rookie draft contracts and shit like that.
All right. So the only way this is having any kind of impact is if the NFL adopts freshman year football rule where everyone on the team has to play like at least 3 snaps or something.
That was a rule. I just realized that.
Huh. Get people involved. Yeah. Help people learn the sport.
Okay. But here's my problem with that, with tackle football, is that it is a violent fucking game. It is unbelievably dangerous for people who know how to play it as safely as you can. Now, you take someone who did not learn the game of football and they're going in just freshman year, just like, I have no fucking clue what I'm doing. Like, it's a safety hazard. It just is. Like, it's a sport that I don't think you can pick up as a 15-year-old freshman in high school. Like,
I see.
I think you had to have been playing that your whole life. And that's one of the main things with like the shift, the pivot to like flag football for youth football. And then like full contact, yeah, starting in like high school, it's like there's so much fundamentals that you have to learn in order to play it safely. I'd be a little concerned about kids that played flag football their entire lives, and then all of a sudden, all at once, it was just like, let's go, baby. Like, hit some people, see what happens. Like, that's terrifying too. So it's like, I just don't know how the sport survives, and it's not just like eventually one day flag football entirely, but who knows?
Okay, so it's like a bare knuckle versus gloved boxing effect where you have the veneer
Yeah.
of safety, but in fact you're actually like motivating people to play more roughly and ignorantly. Okay.
Yeah, they just wouldn't know. There's so
Yeah.
much technique involved that helps keep you safe. Like, and again, it's minimizing. Like, it doesn't actually keep you safe at the end of the day, but it's like, oh, when you tackle, when I was a kid, some of the shit changes. When I was a kid, you were taught when you tackle someone, say like they're running this way and you're kind of like coming in at an angle, you want to put your head in front of their legs as you wrap them up to like stop their momentum, you know, like an extra added benefit of wrapping them up. Since then, they've started teaching the exact opposite. Like, they're like,
Oh.
that's dangerous as shit to like put your head right in front of someone's legs. You're gonna get smacked and your neck is gonna get hit and like all these problems. They're like, no, you wrap up and you put your head behind the runner, which is a less secure tackle, but it's much safer. So, like, that type of technique, you don't learn that overnight. That's from like countless repetitions that you're constantly doing. Like, and it's happening bang, 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 like super fast. I just don't know how it happens. I don't know how it would work. And that's not me being like, football's soft. They need to get back to like the basics of actually tackling and shit. It's just me being like, I don't know if it would work. I think we just got to do flag football, y'all. Like, if we're truly being like, hey, these 13-year-olds shouldn't be getting a bunch of concussions, then I think it's time to just pivot and say fuck it, like, because it's going to get dangerous no matter what.
Speaking of pivoting, it's time for us to talk about the Oscar nominees.
Barbie snubbed. Well, not Barbie. Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie snubbed.
No, that's how passionate people are about Barbie. Like, Barbie should be nominated for every category. Even
Yeah.
international, it released internationally, you know?
Best international film. Let's do it. Let's get that campaign started.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, the discourse around that has been wild and frustrating, and yeah, I don't, I it, TLDR, this doesn't have to be the entire focus of our podcast, and maybe shouldn't since this is three men on this podcast. The way people have begun to equate like supporting Barbie to supporting women is really concerning, and some fandom shit that I don't super care for at all. Yeah.
They do
Also,
it with
like,
every movie that represents an underrepresented group. It becomes a rallying cry, and rightfully so, because they're underrepresented. Like, that's why that this movie hit such a chord with a lot of people. I personally think that it was snubbed, but like in the way that every year there's like random ass, just like, what the fuck? Come on. Like, obviously that needs at least a nom. The thing is, though, is that at the end of the day, my conversation with that is always like, would they have won? Like, genuinely, were Greta Gerwig or and Margot Robbie going to win the Oscar for Best Actress or Best Director? And I think, I'm not saying most, I'm saying a good amount of people would at least admit that, like, no, they weren't going to win the award. It's just a bit of a, like, slap in the face that they didn't at least get nominated. And it's like, okay, well then, your uproar is going to be somewhat undeserved, because all you're saying is, like, they didn't get a participation trophy, which, like, again, I agree. I think that they should have gotten that participation trophy, but I'm not that up in arms about it, because I think it was a participation trophy. I don't think that they were snubbed, like, oh my God, Greta Gerwig was going to win Best Director for it, because it was a commercial film, and that's rare. Like, you don't get that for commercial films. That's not usually how Best Director works. If anything, they give Best Picture to a movie that was somewhat commercial, and then Best Director to like Best Indie Movie.
My theory of this one, I have no evidence to back it up. I think Greta Gerwig was left off of Best Director just by split voting. I think like if there is a six or one, two, three, four, if there is a sixth notch on there, like a sixth nominee, she would have that one. But and I mean, like, I got, because it's an underappreciated part of directing is like just the logistical end of it, like the behind the scenes stuff. And I think we can all admit, like, on its surface, like Barbie must have been a logistical nightmare to create, with Mattel and other parties having needing to have input, forcing input onto that film. But I don't know, maybe navigating that like is worthy of a nom. I can't say for certain. But also, upon thinking about it more, maybe, yeah, Margot Robbie's Barbie definitely wouldn't have won Best Actress. And I'm starting to think that maybe that role doesn't merit necessarily the best performance either. I think it's kind of written to be, no, Barbie is supposed to be like the surface level experience of being a woman, and then other characters are allowed to engage with that and explore those thoughts, those themes in more detail, in more depth. But like Margot Robbie's performance as Barbie, it by design, it's supposed to be more surface level. And that's,
And as a result, America Ferrera got nominated.
And I mean,
People playing off of it.
I think that it's a little funny that like this movie did get recognized in a lot of ways, and I think deservedly so. I mean, I'm not going to say that Ryan Gosling does not deserve to get that nomination there. I thought he was great in the movie, but I did also think that Margot Robbie was great. I thought that their performances were on par with each other, and I don't have like a frame of reference for a lot of the other nominations there and how they performed compared to her. It is just, I think it's funny. I don't think it's wrong that it happened like this. I think it's funny that like one of the points of this movie is that men get recognized for the same thing that women don't get recognized for. And then like, yeah, they recognized Ryan Gosling, but not Margot Robbie. I mean, they did recognize America Ferrera, but I don't think she performed as well as Margot Robbie did. And again, not saying it's wrong. I'm not going to say that she was snubbed. I think it's just kind of objectively funny.
It's certainly ironic with the themes of the movie, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, and like Best Picture nom, production design nom, couple of song nominations, costume design. I think it was recognizing a lot of what made the movie so great.
Yeah, I it, very much present in the more very much a presence in the technical awards, and that is valid. Like it's, I don't know. Yeah, you were telling me at the top of the year that the Barbie movie was gonna have like eight Oscar nominations. I'd be like, wow, that's weird and surprising. And but then no, seeing the Barbie movie, it's competing in all of those categories that it's nominated for, at least. Speaking of snubs, though, my boy Asteroid City left off of all of this. Andrew, I know you disagree on that one, but yeah, I'm trying to watch. Marie and I are trying to watch more of the nominees. Try to catch everyone before the Oscars, and yeah, already a couple on here that maybe don't deserve to be on here, and Asteroid City should be taking their place.
Yeah, I mean, like as much as I kind of had my gripes with it, I never said it was a bad movie, and there were parts of it that I did really, really like. And I am surprised that it didn't get any nominations on here. I thought that the kind of in the same way as Barbie, I thought the production design was great. I thought all the sets looked fucking fantastic. I did think it was funny, and I thought the performances were really good. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised at all if it got some nominations. So I think it's a little weird that it didn't. Not saying I would have nominated it for like best screenplay or best picture or anything like that, but
Yeah, set deck and costuming, like at least a nom, but yeah, whatever. Salty.
Salty dog. Yeah,
Yeah.
it was good, but I get why it didn't get
Nah.
the nominations. You can't go down the route. The reason that Oscar bait exists as a genre of movie is because of movies like Barbie and Asteroid City, getting quote unquote snubbed. Like they're not designed to win Oscars, and so they're gonna drop the ball in some categories. If you want your movie to be nominated across the board, you've got to make it for the Oscars. You've got to make it for the Academy. And the Academy gets set off and triggered very easily to just like, eh, I don't need this. This one doesn't need it. Like any small little detail can be the thing that just drops a nomination here and there. And in Asteroid City, yeah, I see why it would just get completely left off because,
Because it's a silly movie. I mean, like,
it's
I
Wes
don't
Anderson, Wes
even people that
Anderson-ing.
like loved it, I think, are not going to say it's not a fucking like goofy movie.
No, not, it's not a goofy movie because that would have been, that gets nominated for Best Picture 10 times out of 10.
Yeah. It's
He loves
not
his
an
son.
extremely goofy movie.
Whoa.
He loves his son. Okay. Oscar, give
He
him
just
Best
wants his
Picture.
approval.
How goofy can this movie get? Extremely.
Damn, bitch, you live like this?
Wait a second. Did.
There's a couple movies on here that like came out in January, and I was like a little confused about. And I'm sure they had advanced screenings and limited releases, especially with like festival circuits and stuff like this. But like Zone of Interest came out like a week ago, I'm pretty sure. And it got nominated a few times.
Yeah, it
But
just
I
has to have a
am.
certain amount of screens, I think, within the window to get
Yeah.
nominated.
I'm looking back at previous year's Oscar noms right now. I thought Grand Budapest won Best Picture. No, it got some technical
No.
awards. Was
It was
nominated
nominated for Best Picture,
yeah.
yeah.
In 2014, lost to Birdman,
Yeah.
which all right, a little weird in hindsight.
Birdman is an Oscar bait movie,
Yeah,
like through
that's
and
what I'm
through. And
saying.
it's good. Like, I'm not saying that I liked Birdman a lot. Oscar bait doesn't mean like bad movie, obviously.
Also in 2014, the film American Sniper was also nominated, and that
Yeah.
is,
Oh
wow,
man.
that was an Oscar-nominated film. That is wild.
I'm
Didn't
telling you,
Brad
man.
Cooper, Brad Cooper, didn't Bradley
Brad. Me
Cooper,
and Brad, we go way back.
B Dog, we call him. Didn't he get nominated for best actor in that movie? Or did I make that up?
Probably. But again, you guys, like, that's an underrepresented group. Like, I'm throwing it out there. Not in society,
Snipers from America are an underrepresented
but in
group.
movies, like conservative middle America, like rah-rah patriot films, like, yeah, that's an underrepresented group. Like going to the movies, like that's, it's the same thing. It becomes a rallying cry. It becomes a thing. And then they have to give it a nod because it's like, no, this group is intense. Like they really, really want this movie to be Best Picture. And yeah, it's a less noble cause, I would argue, than something like Barbie or Black Panther or insert movie here representing an underrepresented group. But at the same time, like it's the same concept. It's why a movie like that gets nominated.
Also, yes, Andrew, Bradley Cooper was nominated. But he lost in 2014 to Eddie Redmayne for his portrayal of Stephen Hawking, which, fair. Yeah.
Stephen Hawking canceled.
Well, not back then.
No, this is pre-cancellation, Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
Pre-cancellation Stephen Hawking was like a couple months ago.
Yeah. No, it was a recent cancellation. Yeah, how, what do you think the record is for cancellation post-mortem? Like how many years is the longest someone's been dead before they were then canceled
I guess it
after
depends on the
dying?
frame of reference because I'm sure there's lots of people that
Yeah.
like just found out about Genghis Khan.
Yeah, I was gonna
Like,
say I that was my first thought was Genghis Khan. Like I was like, people probably remember him as, yeah, like this conqueror guy, and then
they're
they
like,
learn more and they're like,
whoa, he did some
whoa,
not okay
he's
things.
pretty problematic, you guys. I think we need to strike Genghis Khan off of our history books.
My immediate impulse is there have got to be a couple of popes in the Catholic Church. That like centuries or maybe even millennia later, the church was, those guys sucked actually. Like they're not, no, they're, we're not talking about them anymore. Vatican, we're all
Once.
about Vatican II now. They were big into
Right.
only Latin in sermons.
Right.
Nope, done with that.
Once they've gotten far enough removed, then the church is comfortable with disavowing them. And in the Catholic Church terms, that's hundreds of years before they're finally comfortable with like, this guy sucked.
Maybe the Tudors shouldn't have been allowed to pick the Pope. That was also, I think, a member of their family.
It's a bold stance, but also they're appointed by God. So I don't know how you justify that.
God told me to choose him.
Yeah.
Ergo, God chose him.
Basically.
Yeah.
Columbus is up there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Columbus is a bona fide, recent cancellation. That's a last 20 years type cancellation. And that man's been dead for 500 years. So there you go. I think that's what I'm going to go with.
Hmm.
Columbus final answer.
Valid.
And it's this, and there's a group pushing back against the cancellation and being like, no, it's about Italian American representation and stuff. And it's like, ooh, yeah, this is like a modern day cancellation. Like there's backlash to the cancellation. If Columbus was alive, he'd be on Joe Rogan's podcast talking about cancel culture and how I did great things, but they only remember the bullshit.
Recalling that conversation, I feel like a lot of Italian Americans at the time Columbus Day was canceled. Not our guy. We do not condone Christopher. No,
no, all right. the exact opposite.
Italians love Christopher Columbus.
Columbus Day is still a federal holiday because of Italian Americans being like, you're not taking this shit from us. Like, absolutely not. This is now a celebration of Italian American heritage. And there are still
probably the most famous Italian ever.
There's so many Columbus Day parades in cities that have large Italian American populations. Like it's messy.
Who's a more famous Italian?
Tony Soprano.
I was going to say, don't say James Gandolfini.
Yeah. No, chill millennial Zoomer, Zillennial type Italians. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're willing to disavow Columbus, but they didn't grow up in that culture of this dude's a god.
Do you guys remember, I mean, it was such a brief moment, but when conservatives were saying that cancel culture is not just an idea that sometimes people don't like something about you, but it's a physical, legal thing that happens to you, you get canceled and your whole life is dissolved and shit,
right?
They're like, let me tell you guys, one of these days they're going to try to cancel Jesus. And then people are like, if they cancel Jesus, I'm going to kill every last one of them. No. What the fuck are you talking about?
What does that mean, cancel Jesus?
Yeah, exactly. Literally. What the fuck? I mean, there are people though that think that Jesus has been canceled and that they are being oppressed because Jesus
Christmas
was canceled.
The Christmas shit. Yeah. The war on Christmas.
So if that were true, that would be, I think, the oldest cancellation, but obviously not real.
But Jesus didn't do shit. Jesus was boring, bro. That was his whole thing. It's like there's three times where he lost his cool, and even then it was pretty righteous. Like he was in the right when he did it. It's kind of boring. Why would you want to cancel biblical Jesus? Now, there is a show called Devs on Amazon, I think. It was a limited series where because of they basically figure out that predetermination exists and they have a supercomputer powerful enough to simulate our universe with the exact conditions. So therefore they can look into the future, but they can also look into the past with perfect accuracy and see every single thing that happens. If we were to do that and find historical Jesus Christ of Nazareth and actually analyze every single one of his acts, I'm going to guess there'd be some cancelable shit in there. On modern modern lenses, I don't think historical Jesus Christ of Nazareth was going to be good enough there to hold up to our modern sensibilities. But maybe I'm wrong. Well, who knows? Maybe he was the Son of God, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe all that shit was real. But
I mean,
Abraham tried to kill his kid. I don't know. I didn't read the Bible. I want to say that's the right one.
I think that's right. I think it was Abraham.
Yeah. He was going to kill his kid just because someone told him to. That
wasn't
someone.
Super
not cool.
It was a real deity. In the context of that story, God is real. There is no doubt about the existence of God. It's not like modern times where there's people who don't believe in him and it's kind of up in the air. This is just for reals, God is talking to him.
For reals.
So that does, I think, alter it a bit. I think you have questions to ask of whether this God is worthy of following his instructions, but you know, if there's a real deity commanding you to do something, tell me you wouldn't at least consider it. Like, tell me you wouldn't at least be like, but what happens if I don't? Like, do I cease to exist? Like, what happens?
That is where a lot of fantasy fiction kind of falls apart for me, because a lot of them paint it as, oh yeah, this is vaguely the Middle Ages.
Right.
But we have tangible proof that, like, multiple gods exist. And I feel like if that were a given, if, like, God, if you could go see God, like, actual, and, like, they're doing magic, like, fundamentally society is being restructured around this.
Yeah, they're not going to, like, have swords and, like, get into night battles when God's real, like, and God exists and he's walking around and, like, lighting fires and shit like that. Like, it would be like, all right, well, what do you want us to do, man? Like, we're on your side, apparently. We have no choice. Yeah, Game of Thrones was like that, right? Like, when the shadow demon showed up and it was like, oh, I thought this was, like, political intrigue and, like, worship gods because there's, like, you know,
that's culture
mystical
and context
Middle Earth
and shit.
Stuff. Yeah. And like, there's these demon guys, but, like, that's more, like, evil than, like, necessarily, like, God type shit. And then, yeah, no, like, literal proof of God comes in. You're like, so this is the real one, huh? Like, seems like an asshole, but he is real. Like, you can't deny him. You can't be like, you're a heretic because he's real.
That, and then, like, when they would bring people back to life and shit. And it's like,
same
that's,
God.
Just objectively true. Like, this.
No.
They said that he does this certain shit, and then it works. It happens.
Like, this God is canon. He is for real. Whether you choose to worship him or not, that seems like a personal decision. But to deny his existence is insane. Like, you're just sticking your head in the sand. It's like denying that gravity exists. Like, I don't know what you want. And that would, fundamentally alter the fabric of society. Because in the world of Game of Thrones, there's no resistance to the Lord of Light. Like, what the fuck? What does that mean? Like, he doesn't even physically appear, you know? Like, he's just around you at all times. Like, what are you supposed to do? How do you fight that if you hate him? Because, like, you should hate him. He kind of sucks. Like,
maybe the more established Church of the Seven would condemn the Lord of Light as some kind of demonic entity. Still real, though.
Yeah.
And honestly, there's enough poverty, there's enough issue there that I feel like a lot of people are just, like, getting in the corner of the thing that is real magic.
I do want to say, like, I was trying to find, you know, I was trying to, like, one-up you guys and, like, find, oh, you guys forgot about this guy from, like, 5,000 years ago, whatever. But I found an article, like, a listicle that was, like, 10 examples of, you know, ancient cancel culture. And it was like, number 8, the Hollywood blacklists. And it's like, okay,
what?
Like, yeah.
Ancient.
Yeah, ancient. Number 10, like, this one made the most sense. It was, like, the Greek practice of ostracism,
never
where, like, people would vote to literally kick people out of society. But then, like, number 2 was imperialism, because they canceled cultures.
The concept of imperialism.
Yeah, the concept of imperialism, because that was cancel culture, because they canceled cultures. And then number 1, ahead of that, the whole concept of imperialism was Alan Turing.
What
a random ass number 1.
Yeah, bad, absolutely. Like, but you're going to say that was worse than the whole history of imperialism?
And genuinely, I actually see what that author is saying with imperialism being cancel culture, because that was a lot of the justification for imperialism, was like, these are savages, like, their culture is wrong, it's bad, we are bringing them enlightenment, we are canceling their culture.
Their reasoning was because they canceled cultures.
No, but they were.
Because of the wordplay.
Canceling cultures, though.
I get it, yeah.
And for the same reasons that we cancel people, like, because they were like, they're bad, we need to stop this, like... That is fun wordplay. Yeah, the Hollywood blacklist being an ancient cancel culture. Bro, there's people alive today
Yeah.
that were on that fucking blacklist. Like,
Yeah.
this is not the
Because like
same.
Galileo was on there. Like these were wildly different time frames that they were looking at. Yeah.
I mean, isn't the whole thing with canceling that it can't be through like a state agency because
Yeah, I
that's
agree
just
with that.
punishment?
Yeah, it
It was
can't be
the
like the elites. It has to come from
right.
like a
Yeah.
groundswell of like grassroots type
I listen.
cancellation.
And maybe the people of Galileo was in Rome, right? I was in maybe the people of Italy at the time were like, well, we really don't like this dude's heliocentric model of the universe. We don't want to associate with him. We don't want to do business with him. But I doubt that. I doubt they gave a shit about that.
This dude's stand-up special, he just really focuses on the heliocentric shit, and it's getting old. Like, move on. I say that we hashtag Galileo's over party. Like, I get it. You think that the fucking sun is at the center of the universe. Like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, when you say it once, it's a joke. When you say it 10 times, clearly this is your worldview, and that's just problematic. Like, get out of here. I'm not saying you don't deserve to live, but you don't deserve to do what you do for a living. That's a privilege, all right? That's not a right. You don't get to be an astronomer. Like that's a privilege that's granted to you. And we can take that away.
I was listening to a live recording of Joe Rogopoulos's podcast at the Coliseum. Yeah, and like he did not have kind things to say about Galileo.
Well, wait, no, that's inverted now.
Yeah.
Now the shitheads are canceling
Yeah,
people.
Joe Rogopoulos would definitely be
Would be
down for this.
pro Galileo. He'd be like,
Yeah.
I've
You guys
always
don't
thought
fucking
that the.
understand it. The sun's at the center of the universe, and big church just doesn't
Yeah.
want you to know that.
Joe, that's what Joe Rogan thinks he is. He
Yeah,
thinks he's the guy that has it figured out and is on the right side of history
actually,
and
wait,
will be proven correctly.
if I'm attributing some stuff correctly, Joe Rogan would actually be way into some of Galileo's shit. Like, Galileo, you're telling me you can activate more of your brain by sleeping 15 minutes every hour, and that's all you sleep? What is that
Yeah.
adjusted sleep schedule doing for you?
I want to say that was like Socrates or
That might be
something,
Socrates, yeah.
but
Same potato potato.
They're
Galileo,
both
Socrates.
Mediterranean, like both
Also,
ancient.
to backtrack a little bit to a previous point, of course, evangelicals are claiming that Jesus is canceled because, yeah, so much of that culture, so much of that political
Yeah.
and social identity is based on a sense of undue oppression, a sense, it's like an
Persecution
un
complex.
yeah, persecution, that they are actually marginalized. And of course, they would co-opt the language and mechanisms of social canceling for that because you can't prove that. That's a part of it. That is the unquantifiable nature of it, is how canceling can work like effectively in society. But
Yeah.
so of course, they would
If
co-opt that.
Joe Biden did the thing that every like conservative shithead thinks he's going to do and just bans Sunday worship at churches or something, that's not cancellation. Like that's
Yeah.
now state oppression, and that's very easy to prove or disprove. Like, but yeah, just saying that like our culture isn't tolerant, that's very like ethereal, and you don't actually have to provide any evidence of that. You can just say that's what's going on, and people who agree with you will buy it. Like that's 100% how it works. And yeah, it just comes from the historical roots of Christianity, where they were genuinely somewhat persecuted because they were kind of fucking whack jobs. Like
Yeah.
that's kind of their whole thing. Like they were the Mormons of their time, where we're like, oh, if my grandparents are old enough to remember when that thing was made, probably not real. Like, probably
Yeah.
we can thoroughly disprove that. And now it's just been through like de or decades, I almost said decade,
Yeah, it's been
centuries
like
and
60 years.
yeah, centuries and millennia of like whitewashing, of a historical whitewashing, where now it seems somewhat plausible because it's very old. But that, yeah, core root of what actually binds people together, which is kind of culty, of like, yeah, we are persecuted, we are on the outside of society. That's what's kept them in such strong numbers in this enlightened age, where that's not really a common viewpoint anymore. And Yeah, it makes for some weird ass cognitive dissonance where you are in the majority, you are clearly in the majority, and still feel like, no, everyone's against us and we're all at immediate threat of being killed for our beliefs. Like, yeah.
I have a stray thought on that. I was reminded recently that the only description of the devil, like as a like entity, as a cosmic entity in the Bible, paints the devil as a dragon.
Yeah.
We gotta get more depictions of that shit, because that sounds metal as hell. Like Jesus Christ fighting a dragon? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I get me to go to Sunday school.
I think Satanists use that depiction a lot.
Fuck
So like
yeah.
he's fucking rad, dude. Like there's this cool ass dragon who says fuck God. Like I'm gonna do my own thing. Like this dude sounds metal as fuck.
Again, this is coming from a guy who went to Sunday school and never once read the Bible. The devil's a dragon?
Yeah.
He's not. No, like there's the language is a fucking complicated ass
I
thing.
mean, like,
And
is it because they say like the serpent in
he's
the
a
Garden of
beast.
Eden?
Yeah, he's a serpent in
Okay.
the Garden of Eden, but that's not the devil. That's not
Oh
like
no,
what
that's.
we consider the devil. That's like an agent of like, yeah, evil and chaos. Like even that isn't Satan, quote unquote. But like there's so many centuries and millennia of like canonical, like in the actual original sense, like canonical additions, you know, that it's been so confused, like, and language is a confusing thing. Sometimes they'll say like a beast or things that then can get translated through three different layers, and then it becomes dragon, like a game of telephone. Like it's he's not what we consider a medieval dragon. Like he's not a winged thing with four legs that flies around and loves gold,
He's a
but like
wyvern.
he's a much more like
He's a
grounded.
beta dragon.
He's a grounded version of a dragon. He could exist in our world. It wouldn't be that
He's
insane.
a
Like,
rhinoceros. Yeah.
no, I mean, he might be a wyvern. I don't know. I could see it. Like, wyverns could exist, right? Like, bats are basically tiny,
Yeah.
furry wyverns. Like,
Would dragons be mammals if they were real?
dragons with four legs? Yeah, probably.
Winged mammals?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there
No,
any
like, but
flying lizards? There's no flying lizards, right?
birds are kind of flying lizards. That's the whole
I
thing.
mean,
Like,
well, okay.
they've just
Yeah.
been so far removed from what we consider lizards that now they're their own thing. But yeah, no, like pterodactyls are definitely wyverns, like just full blown. That's
Isn't
what a wyvern is.
there a thing that cold-blooded animals, like alligators, Komodo dragons, like that's actually their max size, like any
Yeah.
larger than that, and that like cooling system doesn't work?
Yeah,
Well,
that and invertebrates in
eh,
general, just like.
they can get a little bit bigger just because like there were lizards
But that
that
was because of
existed,
oxygen.
right? Yeah, like
The atmosphere was made up of an entirely different like chemical balance, and like modern day, that's as big as like
yeah.
that archetype can get. So yeah, no, if we do some terraforming on planet Earth, we can bring back the wyverns, baby. Let's do it.
Listen, we're gonna have to anyway. Might as well have fun with it, right?
That's what I had a fun hypothetical experiment in college that like using genetic sequencing and stuff. Could we turn a dog into a dragon? Like
Yeah,
we
I remember you talking about this, about like selective breeding over like
Yeah.
thousands of years. Like, could you, yeah, make a dog with selected traits that eventually turn into a
Eventually,
dragon?
like it sprouts some little tiny shitty wings, and you're like, oh fuck, that's our one. And then you just breed the shit out of that one and keep it going, and eventually it kind of can flap those wings, and then eventually, like it's able to hover off the ground, and then you get the strongest hover, and you keep doing that eventually. Like, what's to stop it? I don't know. Other than horrific mutations and deformities, what's to stop it? That's what I'm saying with genetic sequencing,
Right.
with like actual like analysis of like, no, this needs to be the perfect sperm with the perfect egg that like perfectly creates this creature. I don't know.
Speaking of unstoppable, can anything stop the Milwaukee Bucks now that Doc Rivers is our coach?
Doc Rivers can.
A competitor, a competitive team that is bound for the championship, they could stop us.
Doc Rivers is definitely an upgrade over like what was going on with Adrian Griffin. I'm not going to pretend that he's not. It's just, it feels like this was kind of a whole waste of time because the Bucks never wanted Adrian Griffin. There was really only one guy that did, and he was the most important guy. And then he was proven wrong. Like they could have chosen the right guy this offseason, and now they can't. They just have to take the best of what's left. And Doc Rivers is probably the best coach that is available right now.
Terry Stotts. Dude, Terry Stotts would have been so perfect if he would have come back.
Yeah, exactly. Terry Stotts quit.
He quit as the assistant. If you came back to him and said, like, hey, man, we fucked up. Here, take the top job. There's a chance he'd say yes.
Yeah, maybe.
People were saying Bud, and it was like, yeah, Bud's objectively better. But I hope for Bud's sake that if he got that call, he'd
Bud isn't available for the same reason Stotts isn't available.
But it's a little different, right? Like, Bud's dad, Bud's brother tragically passed away due to cancer. And from like one really bad playoff performance, they were like, see ya. Like, that's like, if he had any level of self-respect, if Horst calls Bud, Bud is going to laugh maniacally for a minute straight and then hang up the phone. Like, because that's some objectively hilarious, like, levels of pride to, or lack of shame, give him a call there. Stotts, I think, like, he's an over the hill guy. He probably will never be a head coach again. If he was an assistant who had a falling out with the coach and quit, we remove that coach, come back to him, be like, hey man, you know the ins and outs, you're familiar with the personnel, you're familiar with the players, like, what do you think, you want to give it a run? Like, I feel like there's a chance he would have said yes. And I think he would be much better than Doc Rivers. So maybe that's just me.
Mm.
Becky Hammond? I don't know, man. Who says no? I don't, compared to fucking Doc Rivers. We'll see. Maybe he'll prove us all wrong. Who knows? But it seems like he has a ceiling. It seems like he's the Mike McCarthy of the NBA. Like, solid coach. Absolutely solid coach. But
Becky Hammond is Russian?
Yeah, I think she was Russian-born, right?
Hmm.
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting. And then the other bit of news I have here that hopefully y'all have more information on, as I've kind of been starving myself on this in anticipation of the election year. Trump lost a defamation lawsuit and had to pay a lawyer, or not a lawyer, a journalist that he defamed. Like,
Andrew already.
Go for it.
He was ordered to. He will not. And like, when there's these huge like lawsuits that happen like this, and they're like, yeah, you now owe a fucking insert number of millions of dollars, it will never be paid. It just won't, ever. It never does. Like, every once in a while there's like some like minuscule payment plans that are put into place where they get like a literal fraction of that amount of money. He is not going to pay anybody $80 million. He's probably not going to pay her anything. Unless he loses the election and then all of his assets are seized, like as part of like some, you know, follow-up revenge investigation, like none of that money is going to her. It's just not.
I mean,
because if he pays her anything, he might as well just drop out of the race. Like, it's just fucking not going to happen.
Doesn't that trigger another lawsuit though? Like, this happened to my grandfather, was a small business owner. Like, people stole shit sometimes from his business and they'd be ordered to pay damages.
It's not in the same scale. Yeah, like,
your grandfather's not Donald Trump.
Right, but like, the principle of it should exist.
Oh, the principle. I agree with you.
Yeah, no,
and I agree with Andrew.
Not saying that like your logic is wrong. I'm just telling you that's not going to happen.
His lawyers are going to tie it up in appeals for years and years. Yeah. And by the time her attorney fees and everything are paid, he'll probably be fucking dead. Like, it's irrelevant. She can probably try to collect from his estate, but it's too large of a settlement. Right. If paying someone $500,000 in hush money, absolutely at the drop of a hat, but $73 million in a very public, lawsuit that he lost, like, that's, I agree with Andrew. I don't think that's gonna happen. But I don't
Alex
agree with
Jones,
you,
man, isn't paying any of that shit that he got ordered to pay, right? Like,
I agree with, but I do disagree with you a little bit, Andrew, that like, if he were to pay, he might as well drop out, because no, he fucking doesn't. He'd just be like, oh, I'd get arrested if I don't. Like, you
right,
still support
but
me.
He knows that he won't be arrested if he doesn't. Like,
no, I know, that's what he would say to his followers. Like, if he did pay out a little bit, his followers wouldn't be like, wait, I thought you were innocent. Why are you paying? They'd just be like, Trump.
No, like his,
We love Trump.
but Trump is bulletproof with his base. Like that has
Yeah.
been, we've known that for. The question is whether or not this stuff is going to have an impact on like other undecided voters or people just like not even like fully in the Kool-Aid versus in Biden. Yeah.
There's no undecided voters. There's only undecided in the sense of like, I might not vote.
Right.
Like there's no undecided, like I might vote for Trump or Biden. I don't know. There's the people that will vote for Trump, the people that will vote for Biden, and then people who will not, who aren't sure if they're going to vote or not, like who are like pretty locks, like I'm not voting for Trump, but I don't know if I can vote for Biden. And then
but those people, like you said, they either won't vote or they'll vote for somebody else out of principle. Like they'll vote for
same thing as not voting.
Yeah, I know that it's not the same thing as not voting, but they'll convince themselves that they're like, I'm making a statement.
You'd be making a statement if we had a valid third party candidate, which we don't. So
Actually, like, and this is vaguely going into the breakouts and like other stuff that's happening, but and I can't believe I'm about to make this leap in thought. Actually, the idea of like this lawsuit, this payout being like too big to the point that it's actually harmful to the person who filed and won the lawsuit, the defamation lawsuit against Trump, that weirdly ties into a thought I've been having regarding Pal World recently. Not only because that discourse is both infuriating, but also like I can't look away from it. It's a car crash of discourse for me. Mm. But yeah, a big part of it, a big part of the pro-Pal World people's argument is, well, look at how big this is. Look at how successful this is. Look at how many people are playing this. Look at how big this is on Steam, how it's affecting culture. As like a positive, as like proof of, you see, Pokemon games have been shit all along, and this is what people really want. And I'm kind of like, yeah, but is this game too big for such a small team to take up? Like, is this going to be too successful? Is this going to work against it in ways that, hey, if this were under the radar as like more of a niche thing, as more of a this has its audience kind of thing, would that maybe be better for it long term? If in any other way, then, hey, if this like isn't at the top of Steam right now, does the Pokemon company not bother pressing a couple lawsuits against it?
Pokemon. It
can, yeah, Pokemon's very litigious. So I think they
press
sue
lawsuits
no
against anybody. Doesn't matter how big they are. Like,
I think that it can go either way. Like there's plenty of indie developers that had a huge, unbelievable breakout, and then they just kind of fell apart because they couldn't keep up. Like Fall Guys, for example. Like they could not keep up with how popular it was, and ever since then the user base has fallen off a cliff. But like Epic Games was not a fucking blue blood developer, and Fortnite single-handedly made Epic Games a mega company. Like,
yes,
you can do it. You've got to have the right people in place ready to scale up at a fucking drop of a hat and just keep ripping off other games, keep adding content constantly, like keeping it refreshed and stable. Like if servers go down, that can kill your game. Like if they go down for a day or two, your momentum could be completely lost. So you got to keep the game stable, got to keep adding features, got to keep adding quality of life improvements, and you could be a billionaire. Like that's, I think that you take the swing at a billion and you'd rather have that than like a quasi successful game that might get remembered in a few years. Like, and you make maybe, you know, couple mil and drop out. I feel like you take the swing. If I'm them, I'm happy. I'm desperate. I'm working 18-hour days, but I'm happy. I'm like, I can't believe what's happening right now.
Yeah, the churn finally coming out in my favor. Yeah, that's fair. To talk about a game one of us is actually playing, though, Andrew, you finished Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, I don't got too much to say about it because I've already talked about the game before on the podcast. It's a really fun time. It's a good game. It plays really smoothly. It's so much different than the other Resident Evil games because it's so like combat heavy and silly. Like the other Resident Evil games like have their goofy moments, but this game is like straight up wacky, dog. Mm. Like you basically play as an emo superhero who goes around roundhouse kicking bug people in the face. And yeah, had a great time playing it with my wife, Jade. After finishing it, I got access to the Mercenaries mode, which is the kind of, keeps you playing for a long time game mode with like time challenges and shit.
Oh,
But
yeah.
yeah, it was a good time.
Huh.
Ironically, around the time that I finished that, I upgraded The Last of Us Part 2 to the remastered version because I didn't have to pay $70 for it. And I got the no return mode. I mean, yeah, like the whole game got upgraded and added some extra features and graphical improvements and whatever. But the no return mode is this like roguelike, like encounter based, like randomized system where you play as like different characters and get different weapons and abilities and face different enemies, different game modes and shit. And it is difficult. It like boils down like everything that's good about The Last of Us gameplay into like these weird little like 5 to 10 minute segments. And it's fucking hard. I'm enjoying it though.
Are you okay? So you're enjoying it. So that kind of answers this question. But we keep coming back to this conversation with The Last of Us 2. Are you able to have the dissonance between the themes of The Last of Us 2 are fundamentally that violence is bad and should be avoided, and now it's has a new game mode where you just
The
do the violence on repeat.
yeah, I mean, but it removes that story element, so like
Okay.
it like all of the guilt is gone, like all of the emotional connotations of what's happening are gone, and instead it's about like maximizing your character's like specific abilities that they have for each situation. Yeah, I mean, like it's fun. The Last of Us is a very dark game that is good but not fun. And this makes it fun. And I'm gonna replay The Last of Us Part 2 because I played it once and I never replayed it. I've always kind of wanted to just to see how I feel about it after the fact. I'm going to do that, but I'm gonna let myself have some fun with no return first and then make myself very sad. Yeah, I don't know. It's worth $10.
Get ready for season two of The Last of Us.
Yeah.
It's coming. It's gonna get messy.
Ryan, what are you checking out? And I mean, I know part of that is like you're halfway through the first season of The Sopranos. So if you want to talk about that, I'm down.
We are doing a Sopranos rewatch as well. It's pretty good. Yeah, no, watching The Sopranos. What else are we watching? Yeah, that's mostly it, honestly, at this
Yeah.
point. Sopranos is good.
I
It's aged decently.
oh,
So I'm having fun.
I
What
guess
do
it
you think?
is. I like a lot of the first season. I think that's a really strong opening. I guess the thing that tripped me up though going into the first season is that I knew culturally that The Sopranos kind of invented this idea of prestige TV. But then a lot of the first season is just kind of day in the life of Tony Soprano shit, and I enjoy that a lot. Both, like the tension, the drama that arises from his everyday life, but also that he has to hold like these like dad shit on equal weight as running the mafia shit, and it's all just a part of his life. Like he can be as frustrated, as concerned with his relationship with his daughter, as he is about people muscling in on his turf. And it's like, oh, so this is why he's having panic attacks, because this dissonance of his life would be enough to fuck with anybody.
Yeah, no, it shows you anyone who has a super stressful job, it doesn't have to be mafia boss like that. It's still just a part of their life. Like it's rarely their entire life, and if it is, they're probably deeply, deeply unhappy. So, yeah.
And then there's also some really fun like other character dynamics, other character writing. Like, yeah, this was maybe like the third or fourth episode, but when Tony's like on a nephew, but in like the family friend kind of way, nephew, sneaks into his house because he has to talk with Meadow, Tony Soprano's daughter, and like deliberately avoids his wife, Tony Soprano's wife, because she is like, I just don't want to have that conversation. If Tony Soprano is basically his mom, then Tony Soprano's wife Carmela is his dad. Tony Soprano's wife Carmela is basically his mom, and he's like, "No, I don't want to have this interaction right now." And that's really, I don't know, endearing, I guess, as they are doing very violent crimes every other episode. Yeah, it's fun. It's good writing.
It's a good show for like the whole like monster theory. Like, nah, man, we're all capable of some really fucked up shit under the right circumstances. Like, these aren't, by and large, there's some sickos. And like, even in the context of the mafia and soldiers, like, there's people that are freaking the other people that most of us would consider quote unquote monsters out, that are like, that guy's fucked. Like, that guy's got serious issues. Like, which is weird because of the shit that they're doing on an everyday scale. Because, yeah, for the most part, they're just regular people that have, under the right set of circumstances, kind of descended into things that, into what we would call monstrous behavior. And that's one thing that I've always tried to like keep fresh in mind, like in this era of just everyone just calling these, you know, any mass shooter, any terrorist, any insert thing here, like monsters. It's monst they're just monsters. And it's like, no, these are people.
Nice.
We got to remember that, like, that these are humans. They're going to be pretty similar to your neighbor and to your uncle and to your insert person here. Like, yeah.
And even within the flesh, and even within the monsters that are present in the show, there are different flavors of them in a way that are. I mean, yeah, Paulie is definitely the most unhinged of the gang, but he's having fun with it, you know? He's living his best life, and that's better, I guess.
Well, what makes people uncomfortable is the inhuman. What makes people uncomfortable is when someone doesn't have any sort of emotion and is incapable of like socializing. And like there's a lot of people out there that do things that would make people call them monsters, but if they met them at a bar, they'd just chat them up, maybe even for like a couple hours, totally unaware that they just murdered someone like 20 minutes ago. Like, because, like I said, they're humans by and large. There are some people that, yeah, like, they're unsettling even to the people who do that type of shit because they're incapable of like being a human being, and that's the disconnect. But for the most part, yeah, not so much. So
When
it's a
they
good show
take their
for
work
that.
home with them, that's the
Yeah,
problem.
not even take their work home with them. Just like when they're just not even cool. Like, when they suck. Like, when they're boring. Like, when they don't seem like they have any empathy at all. Like, when you say something that's fucked up about your life and they're like, okay. You're like, oh, this guy's a monster. I'm scared right now. Like, I just killed someone 5 minutes ago, but like, I don't like that this guy was so disconnected from it all. Doesn't seem like he felt anything when that happened. Like, that's what's actually scary and rare, because it's not how it works most of the time.
I mean,
And
I
that's
know
why,
I.
yeah, we watch shows of like The Sopranos and Breaking Bad and everything, and we're just like, no, these guys are cool. But like, if you just heard about their crimes, you'd be like, holy shit, these are monsters. But you see the human side of them, so you don't think of them as monsters.
Speaking of monsters, I'm still working my way through a game called Lunacid, very early FromSoft style dungeon crawler, enjoying it a lot. The vibe. The setting, the framing of this game is doing a lot for me. If I haven't expressed it previously, this is a game where, like, vaguely close to modern times, a Cthulhu comes out of the ocean and magic happens. Magic starts happening. So then this game takes place like hundreds, thousands of years after that. And the blending of this like post-apocalyptic fantasy is really interesting, really appealing to me. Like you're just wandering around, like killing things with swords and crossbows, and then you find a VHS tape. You find a VHS tape that you have to play somewhere, and Andrew is more of a horror game buff on this podcast. You might appreciate the terror of like watching a video within a video game, but there's still like everything happening around you. Like it's diegetic. It's not taking up the whole screen. Like you can be attacked. You can have anything happen to you while that video is playing. That was a lot of fun. And then also like there's a character in this game. I forget his name, but he's like a vampire prince. Unclear how he was born. The game actually makes kind of a joke about this. They're like, it's unclear which of his mothers turned in order to sire the vampire. And then you're kind of like, wait, turn into like a man in order to make a child? But then no, it's immediately like, which of them turned into a vampire? Because he was born a vampire, so we don't know. We don't know what's going on there. And that's all, I don't know. It's all really fun to me. It's a fun vibe. It's a fun time. Gross yeah. looking. A lot of blood in this game.
But not enough body horror.
No. Well, you do get your hand chopped off like right away. Like that was the opening cinematic.
That's not that much body horror though.
No. Like, a medium amount.
Yeah, that's rookie shit.
Yeah.
Compared to Annihilation, which did not have enough body horror.
No. No, so. It did not. I was promised Buko body horror. I was promised Cronenberg levels of body horror, and it did not deliver.
Body horror, man. Eh. That's a lot of body horror. No, so why do you think it is that like that type of media that's trying to blend like, oh, it's like medieval style weaponry and stuff like that with like modern sensibilities? It's always like near modern, you know? It's never like you pull out your TV and you connect to Netflix and start watching a streaming show and then you pull out your crossbow and shoot a witch. Like it's always like close. It's always like, oh, there's a record player, or like, oh, there's a, it's like, it's still slightly out of date. Is it like,
right.
Does that help with the anachronism almost maybe? Like, is that, I'm curious what your take is.
I think a part of it is the nostalgia factor of it. Like if you were to find like DVDs out in Lunacid, it would be like, it's whatever. Okay, sure.
DVDs are nostalgia, man.
Yeah.
When's the last time you watched a DVD? I actually am curious.
I'll get that. Like a disc, yeah. Like a digital whatever. I don't know, there's something about the analogness of like slightly older media that I think has like an impact. But then also my more grounded answer is with like slightly older media, like we know the cultural impact that's had. We know like the politics, the socialization that this did to a society. Whereas with current media, like we're still not entirely sure how like the advent of streaming is like affecting us, like both culturally and like just on a more like visceral day-to-day level. So yeah, I think it's easier to play around with the themes that come with like slightly older media when it comes to this kind of adaptation.
Right.
As for why like this one in particular is like sticking with me so hard, I think it's because it's been done wrong so many times. Like this, this is in the future, but due to circumstances, society has regressed a little bit. Like, I don't know, the one that comes to mind is, I forget if it's 28 days later or 28 weeks later, but just that there's a fully functioning medieval society that happened in way too short a time span. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's fun. It plays with expectations and stuff like that.
Yeah, there might be a gun in this game. Yeah. And it's leaning into that shit.
My dream has been to play a game where you have a gun and everyone else doesn't.
That sounds called mass shooter, Ryan.
No, like, it's not. You're good with it. You're not killing everyone indiscriminately. You're a good guy with a gun, and the bad guys don't have guns. The only thing that stops a bad guy with a bow is a good guy with a gun.
Does it have to be a video game setting where guns would be inappropriate? Like, if in our Baldur's Gate 3 campaign, if Frankie just pulled out a Gat, dude.
It'd be so awesome. I downloaded a Skyrim mod. Like, the only game of Skyrim that I ever bought was for PC, and I downloaded a Skyrim mod that puts guns in the game, but it's just not satisfying. They didn't balance them at all. Like, they just made the gun an instant kill, and it doesn't even really have, like, audio or animations. It was kind of a shitty mod. Like, I want a game that's perfectly balanced. It can still be difficult and everything, but yeah, the plot is you have a modern firearm and everyone else doesn't. Like everyone else is attacking you without the modern firearm. Like I find imbalance to be fascinating. Like that's, I find myself going back to that a lot. In fact, when you were talking about how me and Andrew were Madden heads earlier, yeah, talking about like our, if we were to be on the field and everything, I went to Andrew and I was like, cause I like against Andrew, when we would do our dynasties and stuff, I'd put like little fun challenges in there. Like, oh, I got to make a tall team. Oh, I got to make a team that never passes. Like, yeah, what if I had a shitty player and he had to be on the field at all times? Like I just had one guy that Andrew could abuse the entire time. And that adds to the difficulty and have to figure out how to properly scheme around. Like imbalance is inherently interesting to me, especially with video games. So yeah, that would be a game specifically made for me. And now I do kind of want to make that because I've already made it where I think I took the worst team in NCAA football 14, like mm-hmm. just dog shit. Like they basically would win maybe one game if you just simulated the season, but I added a God, I added a super soldier. Mm-hmm. I think I called him John 113, like the, or whatever the Halo guy, whatever Master Chief's real name is. And I set the team in Los Alamos, New Mexico, the Manhattan Project location, and which has a research college now, and was like, oh, they're running an experiment. They're trying to see how their super soldier performs in a college football environment. And then that was my whole like backstory to it all. And then he and just like controlled the super soldier guy and tried to like carry this team of scrubs to a national championship. Like it's interesting. It's fun. So I could do the inverse of like a normal team with one garbage player and just see if they can carry him. So we'll see. Maybe when we start our EA Sports college football journey in 7 months or so.
I don't always enjoy being the control group in.
Yeah, no, it's better against the CPU probably, but it is fun.
All right. I think that's going to do it for episode 243 of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast. I don't know. Do you guys have any better pitches, or is this one just going to be titled Joe Roganopoulos?
Yeah,
is there a more Greek version of Joe?
No, there isn't. Doesn't exist.
All right. Yeah. Why do I keep saying George? Ah, fuck me. All right. Joseph Roganopoulos, here we go. We're cooking on this one. Thank you all so much for listening. Like, comment, subscribe, etc. Support us on Patreon to join the likes of the terrific Tiffany Cole and Sucky Badger. Active link in the description. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me, Lucas Strider, on Blue Sky for updates. Yeah, have a great week. We're through January 2024 in full swing. Here we go. Hope it's a good one. Bye.